Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This is the Best Hang podcast featuring Max Kerman, Shane Cunningham, and I am Mike Bierman. Welcome to the Best Hang podcast. I'm Mike. We got Max. We got Shane. And unlike our last couple pods, we are back to the Zoom setup, which is nice. It's good. I mean, Shane's at home. I see Max is at home. I'm actually in the office. But guys, how's it going? How you feeling? What's up?
It's going great. Just before we started rolling, I cut you off, Mike, because it's something actually I wanted to talk to you about.
Oh,
because you started this story, and. So, you know, before I get into Shane, are you doing okay? I didn't even let you say anything. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
I love when, but sometimes when that happens where then you'll bring Shane in, he does this, always does this good bit where instead of like elaborating on it, he just goes, I'm good. And then, you know what I mean? Which is always very funny.
Everyone else does the perfunctory, how are you? And it's, oh, good. And it's kind of a nicety to start. I don't think it's when the question's asked, it always needs an elaboration. If I had something, I would, but since I don't, I can't.
Actually, you know what I will say is that one of my favorite things about some podcasts is that they don't even do the perfunctory, hey, how's it going? Everyone doing okay? Hey, yeah, we're good. Everyone have a good, like, they're as if they're like shaking hands on the podcast. There's a podcast.
Yeah, because they have an agenda, Max. They know where they're going. I'm trying to get something going. I'm like rubbing sticks together here to start a fire. You know, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, that's true. There's a good podcast called like Bad Takes or something like that with Matt Iglesias. And literally it's just like, I'm so-and-so. And then there's like, boom, right into it. And I'm just so grateful for it. So listeners, if we dilly-dally too much off the top, you let us know and we'll get right to the good stuff faster. And I'll get right to the good stuff right now. Mike, you were talking about this Paul McCartney story with John Lennon. Do you want to describe it? I cut you off because I wanted to save it for the pod. Oh, what is it?
I'm just, one of my great joys in life is something random will happen. Maybe I'll hear like a song on the radio, like something, some random band from the 80s or something. And then the Wiki deep dive just brings me so much joy. I love reading these things, you know, it's like you kind of get into what it was like then. Anyway, long story long, Say 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 is a song by Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson from the early 80s. And he, sort of Michael Jackson, famously, if anyone doesn't know the story, him and Paul were hanging out. I don't know if it was on set of the music video or whatever. And Michael had asked Paul for some like business advice. And Paul said, well, all the money in music is in publishing. That's the way to do it. And then Paul explained how he had bought a bunch of publishing and he made millions of dollars every year off of all of these other people's songs. So Michael Jackson laughed. He goes, ha ha, I'm going to buy your songs, like the Beatles songs. And McCartney goes, you're a good one. And then, you know, one thing led to another. And the sale of this thing, this company called Northern Song, came up, and Michael Jackson actually outbid McCartney and bought the Beatles songs. It's a very famous, infamous story. You can read about it. But I was more interested in the actual company that Lennon and McCartney started in 1962, which was Northern Songs, which their manager Brian Epstein had started. And basically they sort of forever had simmered at signing this shitty deal when they were 21 years old in the back alleyway of somewhere in Liverpool. And there's so many twists and turns, but other parts of the company get bought. There's this guy, Dick James, that like Paul and John like despise. And then I guess at some point they almost got back because they didn't even have the number one. They don't have the most shares in their own company. It's Lennon McCartney, the greatest pop songwriting duo, you know, in history of music. And they didn't even own most of their own music from a percentage standpoint. But I laughed at this one comment because essentially they were kind of trying to pull this move where some people owned little bits of the company. So they were trying to, at some point in like late 60s or 70s, buy those little bits back. They're like, hey, we're the Beatles. These business guys might want to sell me like a 4% here, 3% there, whatever. But then Lennon, I guess, said in the paper, he goes, I'm tired of getting fucked about by these fat businessmen sitting in their arses in the city. And then all those guys were basically like, yeah, we don't want to sell you back our small percentages. Okay. Anyway, so
he Ringo the deal.
They gave Ringo and George, they both had like 1% each in Northern Songs, but then Ringo and George both started their own companies. Anyway, I just deep dove the business side of it, and yeah, it led to a lot of acrimony for the Beatles. This is like one of my great pleasures, just like sitting on a train and reading these things.
This is why I bring it up, because I find great comfort in the Beatles. It's like, and I think a lot of people probably do. It's like, you know, if you're stressed out, you put on a Beatles thing. And also there's like the discovery of the Beatles history and reading the books or watching the documentaries or the movies. Like there's just like so much fun stuff there. And a lot of times it's like retreading things that I already know, but you just kind of remind yourself of like, oh yeah, 1966, they did this, or 1979, or this is what happens. So anyway, what I love about you, Mike, is that like, I think I'm sort of Beatles obsessive. This dude will send me a text message in the middle of the afternoon on a Wednesday or like, you know, Sunday at 10 PM. He'd be like, hey, came across this really interesting, and it's a group chat with me, you, and your brother. And I'm just thinking, and it's like, you do it so often. It's just like you're on a never ending quest for more Beatles factoids. And I just laugh, and I just think about what it is about it for you that makes you just endlessly curious about it. Because it is like fucking hilarious that it's just like it never ends with you. Like, well,
no,
what is it about it? How do you describe it?
What is it about the Beatles? Well, one, obviously I have the same thing that everyone had. You love them when you're a kid. But I think the thing I love about them is I see so many, like they're four guys that are like legitimately friends. You know, they started this thing when they were like teenagers, like John, Paul, and George. And then it grew and it became like a business thing, but they're still making creative stuff. But there's like love there. And then obviously they accomplished more in music than anybody sort of in the history of popular music. But I'm so fascinated by the interpersonal dynamics, you know, like I was just listening to this thing called like a hoot and a sniff, which is like this bootleg where Paul McCartney visits John Lennon in 1976 at this house he's living at, or 75, with like Stevie Wonder on keys, Paul on drums, John on guitar. And it's 25 minutes of jamming and everybody's on drugs, but it's such a fascinating historical relic to listen to. And it's like, there's moments, anyway, shit, like there's just so much stuff. It's such a rich sort of like archive if you're into it. But at its core, I just love that it's like these guys that grew up together and made creative stuff together, and sort of how they fell apart and how they came back together, and the sort of story of how people do grow apart. And I guess I see parallels with like our friends, and I've always been interested in doing stuff in groups, you know, like look, the three of us are doing something. Like when I've been in bands, it's always wanted to be like in a band. I always want to do stuff in groups, and I love the camaraderie and friendship of creating together. And I think the Beatles are the ultimate example of that and the most fascinating to me. That's my answer.
Shane, do you have a comfort blankie?
Seinfeld. Watching Seinfeld makes me feel cozy.
Interesting.
I think it's like that for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think Seinfeld's the Beatles of comedy.
That's an interesting quote. I like that.
Do you not feel that way?
Yeah, ensemble nature of it. Sure. That's interesting.
When you say it, like that, there is something, I guess, because Seinfeld's, even though it's silly to say, it feels modern to me. Like comedy has like this sort of deep history, right? Like if you go back to like stand-ups from the 60s, or like people like Pryor like predate it, but like, and like stuff like Cheers, there was always big sitcoms. But yeah, I guess I'm just trying to figure out if it's our generation, you know, like because Seinfeld is very a 90s thing and there's so much sort of like comedy before that. But yeah, maybe they are the Beatles of comedy.
Does the comedy hold up in Seinfeld, would you say?
I think for the most part, yeah, remarkably well. And it's our generation. It's also our parents' generation. I think Larry David and Jerry are Lennon and McCartney.
Ah, I like this.
Indeed.
What do you think is better, Curb or Seinfeld?
It's tough. Seinfeld is more comforting, I think. Curb might have higher highs. Seinfeld's just consistent.
Well, here's the other question. You could argue that Larry's been better on his own than Jerry has. You know, yeah, the old, like, who had, like, it's almost like, yeah, there's a fascinating sort of rewriting of history there, because it's like, obviously, Jerry's like this sort of beloved, epic, sort of legendary stand-up, but as like a guy that creates movies or shows and stuff like that, what's his real track record? You know, what is it, Comedians in Cars? Whereas Larry sort of created this show that might, maybe it's not on par with Seinfeld, but it is in its own right this massive, massive sort of cultural success.
Who is better on their own, Lennon or McCartney?
That's where I was kind of going. I mean
McCartney did more.
Yeah. He sold more. Wings was one of the biggest bands of the 70s. There was like an old joke that it's like, oh, did you know Paul McCartney was in a band before Wings? Like, that was actually like a thing, you know? So it was like, I don't know. Like, I think commercially huge. And then obviously John Lennon being murdered changed people's perceptions. That happened before any of us were born. So it's hard for us to view John Lennon in any sort of contemporary way. Like, was he considered the least successful? Like, George Harrison, I think, had the biggest selling record, single record, with All Things Must Pass. So it's just fascinating. We can't view Lennon as anything other than a martyr and like a saint, but I think people in the moment maybe didn't see him like that. So, and you know, you can tell Paul always has like a little bit of weirdness about that, where he's like, oh, of course, like, John's a fucking saint, but he's still just like the asshole I made songs with when I was 20, you know, but I can never say that.
What do you
He said in that 1986 interview I sent to you, Max.
Yeah, that's right. That is cool. It's like basically a podcast chat.
And I like that get out of jail free of like, I could never say he's an asshole because he's like, but you're saying it, you know.
You're saying it, yes, totally.
You know, in music, obviously, I think most people just like put the Beatles at the top and there's not even really a question about it. And even people who don't even like the Beatles, like, yeah, I get it. They're number one. In comedy, I was having this conversation because Chris Rock and Chappelle tour together. And I was like, oh, who closes that? Because in my mind, Chris Rock is like sort of the elder statesman of the two. And I don't even know if that actually is factually correct. I don't know who's actually older, but like in my mind, he seems to be, he'd be the one closing.
Well, Chris was a superstar as a stand-up before Chappelle was. Like, Chris had, what was the big, Bring the Pain special?
Is it Bring
there,
the
there's
Pain?
One of them. In the 90s, like 90, like 6 or something, that made Rock a superstar stand-up. Chappelle was, you know, it took a bit for Chappelle, but now Chappelle is probably a bigger stand-up.
Well, Chappelle closes. This is what I learned.
Of course, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, and I was just wondering, like, yeah, in terms of like the comedy rankings, because it's like, yeah, as you say, who's more successful or more popular, Seinfeld or Larry David? And I probably the average Joe would know who Seinfeld is, and not necessarily Larry David. But would Larry and who'd be more considered?
Seinfeld, I don't know how much conventional TV matters anymore, but that Seinfeld runs everywhere, somewhere in the world all the time. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing Seinfeld, like if you're in a hotel and you throw on the TV, like there's a good chance you can maybe find some Seinfeld if you sit there for long enough. So it's like there's that fame element. You know, the name is probably more famous too than Larry David's. What do you think, Shane?
Jerry is more known for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you say the top, who's like the king of comedy right now? Because our friend Bruce Hills at Just for Laugh, he like gave Dave an award at the show, at the concert or the stand-up show in Toronto on January 1st. And he was like, you're the king. I was like, oh, is Dave the king right now? And are you always the king? Like, where's like Burr? Where's Mulaney? Like, I know we can't talk about Louis C.K. anymore, but like
I feel like Chappelle's on his way out though. Don't you?
I don't know.
It kind of feels like the last days of Rome with him a bit, but who the hell knows? It's a long life. What's kind of interesting to me is it's like, do you remember there was like a stretch there where like there was kind of like young superstar comedians would sort of show up on this? Like, remember when Dane Cook was a thing, you know, and obviously like, I don't know, other comedians didn't really respect stuff, but whatever. The point is he kind of came out and was then doing like Madison Square Garden, all this stuff. Who's like the 26-year-old comedian superstar right now? It's like, it's all guys like Burr and Mulaney, like these like lifers, you know? And it's like, I wonder who maybe I'm not thinking of someone right now, but is there like remember when Amy Schumer sort of came out and like shot out of a cannon? And it's like, oh, she's the young, new sort of exciting. Is there anyone waiting in the wings right now or sort of percolating? It's like,
Jared Carmichael had a moment where he came. He was on the scene for a minute there, but I don't hear many people talking about him anymore. But when you say it's a long life,
Globes.
Anything can happen. Is there an incident of someone like Dane Cook having a moment, then going away and then coming back in comedy? Because I can't think of any really off the top of my head. Not that it hasn't happened.
Well, yeah, I was going to make a joke about seeing Pauly Shore at the Chuckle Hut. but I think, I don't, you know, it's a good question. I don't know. Yeah. Well, and it's kind of weird that Dane didn't like, maybe it speaks to his comedy, and I don't really necessarily have like an opinion on the quality of his comedy, that it's like, he's not, like, you'd think his fans would agree with him, right? He was such a college, like, I just remember, like, I remember when I was going, like, to the Madison and a young guy, like, drinking in Toronto, like, every girl I ran into was like, Dane Cook, did you see the Dane Cook special? And I was like, all right.
I'm excited for Mulaney's return. Mm. Because not that he's gone away, he's actually kind of only gotten more popular.
But the shift, Mulaney.
I love Mulaney, but the shift in his sort of, like, public persona, you know, with all the rehab and the kid and the marriage and all that stuff.
So this kind of speaks to what I gravitate toward in like my entertainment stories. Like I kind of love what him and Nick Kroll had, you know, they made this like sort of like Broadway show. Like I love like reading about John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd in that group. And then Bill Murray kind of trying to get in there and them all hating Chevy Chase. Like I just love the human element of these super talented people. That's the most fascinating part to me. Whereas some people are like, I just want to hear the song. Or I just want to hear the comedy bit. I just want the work. I'm like, tell me the story. Cause like, I don't know, which is maybe more universal. All right. But anyway,
no, totally. And I, my favorite thing too is when you hear about like two really famous people or successful people, it's like, oh, do you know that they knew each other in college? It's like, and you don't even associate the two with each other, but they've actually been friends for a very long time. I think that's really cool. But anyway, boys.
I don't know if you got somewhere to go. If we're just, dilly dallying, as you called it, that could have been an alternative name for this pod. But we talk about the Workaholics podcast sometimes, especially those guys. So those dudes, they have a podcast called This Is Important.
Yeah.
And there's like a sort of group chat, and a lot of you guys listen to it a lot more than me. I sort of
every week, it's fucking amazing. Yeah.
But they were doing a movie at Paramount Plus. It was like a Workaholics movie. Everybody that's sort of a fan of them was very excited. It was announced last week that it got shelved. It got canceled. There's a ton of stuff that's in development or was about to go that is getting shelved by streamers just for financial reasons. But this thing was like a month away from shooting, which is crazy because just for listeners, it's like if you're prepping a show like that, like people are hired, like sets are being built, departments are moving, money has been spent. It is, and people's time is booked. They probably have the next 2 months booked to shoot the movie. Mm-hmm. All of that goes away. So they, you know, we were very keen to listen to their pod and their response to it. And anyway, that's super fascinating. Listen to that if you want to listen to it. But it ended it. Anyway, I listened to that pod and I forgot completely. I was listening to another pod and they were talking about dicks being shown on camera. And they were talking about Adam Devine's dick being out in this movie they did for Netflix, who they all love Netflix now because they're probably trying to sell the Workaholics movie there. Being shown in this movie they have called Game Over Man.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I forgot this movie even came out 5 years ago, whenever the fuck it came out. It is the perfect train movie to watch. I've been watching it on the train, which is always hard because I find myself laughing.
I've been watching it this week.
Did you really? Because of that pod?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Oh my God, yes. Because I didn't know Adam Devine had pulled out his wiener. But there is a gag. Shane, have you seen Game Over, Man?
I have. I can't exactly remember it, but I remember there's one scene involving like someone hiding in a closet or something that I laughed so hard at. I think it might be the funniest scene in movie history.
That is Adam Devine's penis is out in the closet. And then anyway, there's another scene in this, and this is like, this is my type of comedy. I laughed on the train and I'm in the quiet zone, so I'm trying to stifle my laugh, but it's so stupid. So the three waiters are in the elevator and they're going down to like the first floor where there's like a henchman with a machine gun ready to like blow them away when the elevator doors open. So they're like, holy shit, we got to get up into the shaft. So they're trying to like boost each other up into it. We've seen this in a million action movies, right? So they're trying to get up and then it cuts down to the henchman waiting with the gun and then the elevator opens. It's like ding and it opens and the henchman looks in the elevator and he gets on the walkie talkie, goes, he's like, they've climbed in the shaft, they could be anywhere now, we got to find them. And then the henchman like runs like to try and, you know, go somewhere else, and then the camera just like the doors on the elevator shut and then the camera pans over to the elevator beside it and the doors open and it's them still trying to get into the fucking roof of the elevator. It's like the perfect switcheroo. Sight gag. And they're like, no one's even down here. And it's just like, it's like that's a simple, stupid comedic gag that if I had written that in the writer's room, I would just be so proud of it because I just love a stupid, like classic type Yeah, it's just so good.
Yeah, it was interesting because they all have movies with Paramount Plus. And so what I like about that podcast so much is that they don't seem to care about offending people like peers. Like they're always kind of talking shit about other celebrities, like especially Durs. Like I'm sure they could say a lot more about the entertainment industry and other actors and stuff, but I'm just always kind of surprised. And like, you know, they're like, if they're going to be like critical of like a comedian or something, they'll be like, they'll do it. Or they'll be like, yeah, that goes okay. Like there's just like a level of honesty that they have, which always kind of blows me away because they're also just like kind of working actors. It's not like they're on like the top of the mountain and have to, you know, not worry about ever getting another gig again. And I feel like on this pod, like we're always like, I shouldn't say that because that might offend somebody or I don't want to do that. Do you know what I mean? But they're just constant. And so them going after Paramount Plus in the public way, given that they all have shows and movies with Paramount Plus, I thought was just incredible. Would you, Shane, do that if Bell canceled the show?
I don't know. I might be relieved in a way. it's very scary. It's scarier than I thought it would be to have the prospect of something you've created come out. Like, I don't know. I thought there'd be more looking forward to it. It's an odd feeling.
Really?
Yeah. It's like when I used to play basketball and I was at a triple A level and it was so serious. And before every game, I would just say, I don't want to play basketball. I hate this. I don't like this anymore. There'd be like nerves and all this stuff that I don't like feeling. So I don't know. I'm different than most, or maybe you can relate, but I like every show I would be dreading if I was you, Max. If I heard the crowd, I wouldn't want to go out there.
You know what? I do sometimes feel that way. I've had versions of this, what you're going through right now. First of all, the first that comes to mind is like writing a song or working on an album. I'm just like, because you have this initial burst of excitement with the song, but then when you have to get in the weeds on it, I'm just like, I don't care.
Yeah,
I was just like, I was really excited about the first part. And now that we're in the editing and the mixing and I'm just like, just tell me when it's done. Mm. Like, I don't even get, like, it's like, I'm excited about the initial idea. I believe in that. Now I don't even know if I like it anymore because it's so fucking convoluted. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, that's not really what I was even trying to do in the first place. It's like, what the fuck? So I relate to that a lot. But the second part is when it comes to shows, and this happens kind of all the time on tour, you know, it's like, it'll be like 7 o'clock or 6:30 the night before we go on stage. We play at 9 o'clock. And I'm always, there's a lot going on in my mind about like, okay, what am I going to say to the crowd? How am I going to make it special? How is this moment going to work? You're just trying to like, this is a lot to take on. And I've just woken up from a nap, like my pregame nap. And before I'm sort of like caffeinated and like a little like two drinks in, ready to go. But there's that window of getting it from a nap where I just feel like rested, but tired at the same time. And I go to myself, I don't want to play tonight. God damn, this sounds fucking annoying. I hate this. Why did I sign up for this shit? Like, fuck me. Ah, fuck. Like, what am I doing in this profession? Oh God, what a lot of work. And then of course, you know, the momentum picks up and you get pumped. But there, like, honestly, every night before the show, there's like a 30-minute window at some point in the afternoon where I'm like, why the fuck are we here again? Good Lord.
Yeah. I like what I like comedically, but I'm aware that I'm ashamed of it also, and I'm embarrassed of what I like. So the other day I showed my in-laws episode 6, just like, it's like a rough cut, but it's far enough along. And just halfway through, I realize I've made a terrible mistake. Like it wasn't something that they could enjoy. I realized this is a polarizing episode.
Yeah.
But before I hit play, in my mind, it was like a Britney Spears pop song. It was very digestible and everyone could enjoy it. And this was before you had told me how much you disliked episode 6 too. So all I had heard was just everyone likes episode 6. Episode 6 is the one that, like, you know, even if you don't like 1 through 5, episode 6, that's the one to show. And the silence in the room was so deafening. And I just wanted, like, to cancel the show or something. But, like, you know, we're working with Bruce and Bruce really likes episode 6. So I was like, that's maybe a glimmer of hope. But my tummy's so in knots about the whole ordeal. Like, ones that I thought I liked, people are telling me they hate. Ones that I thought weren't good, people are telling me are their favorites. It's this roller coaster. By the way, nobody's ever said
they hate any of them. Oh, like that word is so, you know what I mean?
No, hate is strong, but I know you got kicked out of the Zoom, but I was just telling a story of being on a bit of a high on our episode 6, which is kind of our superhero epic filming.
Yes.
And showing my in-laws.
And oh, then, sorry. Yeah. So for our listeners, I don't know how to use my fucking AirPods. So I just went to push it back in my ear canceled. And I got disconnected from the Zoom. So you showed the in-laws. Have they seen all 6 at this point?
No, they haven't. So I avoided showing them 5 because that is an episode that I thought, this one's just for me. Whereas episode 6, which is our superhero epic, I thought this is for the world to see. This is one that's very digestible. This is before Max told me his disdain for it or anyone else had voiced any opinions of it.
Untrue.
So I was on a high. So anyway, I showed it to my in-laws and Mike, like the silence and the embarrassment I felt. It made me rethink everything. Just not that I disliked it, but just you should be ashamed of yourself, Shane, for even having the sense of humor. And how dare you sit people down and present it to the world was my prevailing thought at that time.
Oh, I thought you were like questioning marrying into that family.
No. I think Alex was questioning me doing that. And like, they were like, oh, this is my son-in-law. People are going to see this. You know, and there's a scene, there's like, I'll call it a lovemaking scene with me and another woman in it. And it just, to say that I wanted
really
to crawl out of
too.
My, yeah, that I wanted
so
to
intense.
Jump out of my
it's
skin.
It's all lovemaking. It's like pornographic, like fucking.
Well, come on, Max. I'm trying to word it softly. And, but I wanted to crawl out of my skin and just not be in the room. But I couldn't grab the iPad away from them and like petulantly take it away and go home because it would show that I was upset. But it's painful. This process is painful at times. And luckily, there is, you know, there's people like Bruce who appreciate that. And then an episode 5, which I thought was more of a swing. You really liked it, Max, and other people liked it because I went into that thinking episode 5 was solely for me. But you said it might be your favorite episode yesterday. So.
I think it is my favorite episode. It's so funny too. It's like, when you're working in a creative field, it's like you have your instincts, you have your like baseline, like kind of acumen and skill, and you have a good idea, you think, of what people will respond to. But sometimes it's like the song that I think that is so obvious and so great and transcendent, people go, huh? Okay. And then the song that is, you know, maybe full of a couple kind of cliche lyrics or maybe a little on the nose or something, they go, oh, that's the one. I'm like, what the hell? Like, you like that and you don't like this other thing? So I've been wrong many times as to like what I think will land.
I remember I sent you a song. I won't name the artist, but it's a very famous artist. And they just come out with a record in the last like year or two. And I sent you a song and I was like, oh, I like this one. I'm like, this one, you know, this one hits me right in the old heart. And Max, you just wrote back, this is the most boring schlocky bullshit I've ever heard in my life. And it made me laugh because I was like, interesting. Where is it coming from? I'm like, is he like, does he just not like this style of music? Is it like, anyway, it was a very fat, do you know who I'm talking about? Do you remember
who
the one
it?
I sent
can, we'll beep it. Who it, was it?
It was the.
Okay.
We'll bleep that, Nathan, because they could be a guest on the pod one day.
You know, I've been wrong about another friend of mine who's like helping a younger act with kind of getting their career going, sent me a song and he sent the thing and I was like, thinking to myself, I was like, this shit is so fucking bad. I was like, I hate everything about this song. I hate the way it like looks and feels and everything about it. I was like, I don't get it. This is like a number one trending TikTok song globally. Man, I was so just wrong about it. You know, this is funny.
Yeah. But it's subjective, man. The arts are subjective. Being creative is sometimes being creative, especially putting stuff out into the world, whether it's Shane in a sketch show or Max music or something. It really can be like for as good. And we've talked about this a lot, Shane, but as good, as much as like praise and people saying, oh, I enjoy what you do, or I like what you do. It really can be just like an exercise in humility. It's just like, it's just like putting yourself out there in any way, because it's never. And also, you never remember all of the good things. You just remember like the silence or if somebody does have a negative comment. It's such a weird sort of dance that we do by choice. And yeah, I don't know how healthy it is.
So I will say, I think that's one thing that's made me successful, though, is that I do actually remember the good things. I don't really, that's one of my, like, just my nature is that I hold on to the good stuff and just talk about that a lot.
But if someone comes up to you, Max, and says, I love leather jacket. Are you just like, shut up? That's obviously a hit. Don't tell me that. Tell me the one that's not the obvious hit.
Yeah, to a degree. I am impressed when somebody like gives me a deep cut and like from an older record that they really like. I'm like, sick.
What's a deep cut that really makes you feel good when someone says they like it?
Well, it's the ones that like have not got much fanfare. So it's like, there's a song called Round and Round, which I think is like our best song ever or something.
No, I
like,
love that song. Yeah.
Oh, you do? Yeah, it's very Beatle-y, and there's some Beatle changes. Mike, I want you to listen to Round and Round when we got this podcast, because it's straight Beatles. And just, you know, no one really cares about that song. The Choir is another song that I really like for lots of reasons, and nobody really cares about that one. I know people don't like Hey Kids. I think it's cool. It has like this Elton John thing to it.
Yeah, I dislike that song, yeah.
Yeah.
my brother was like, wasn't my brother like a big, like, no Hey Kids truther? Yeah. Bordering on hurtful. It's like, okay, Greg, we get it. You don't like it.
Something about it is, pull back on the comments. Is nostalgic for me in a weird, like this annoying cartoon I watched when I was a kid or something. It elicits memories or something that I don't like that song for some reason.
Yeah. See, it's so funny too, because in my mind, I'm like, this is so obviously just Elton John and everyone likes Elton John. Like, what are we even talking about? What's confusing about this? But you're totally right. Now that you've said that, Shane, I'm like, oh yeah, I guess that piano part could sound like a kid's piano part in like an annoying show. So totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a few of your tracks though, and this is how everybody sort of like relates to music or shows, but like there's a few from the era, like Hey Kids or like Private School, that I don't really like. I can't even consume as their own individual pieces of music because they're so of that time when you were living on at 80A, and I was like, we were just all together all the time, and those songs were big, and it was like maybe the first time you played Cops, Coliseum, and anyway, so those songs just remind me of a time more than I can consume them as individual pieces of music. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, that's why it's so important to kind of keep at it and hope that like young people continue to listen to your stuff, because I literally yesterday I was at a coffee shop and this guy goes, oh my God, he's so excited to meet me. And he was like, I listened to you to Michigan Left. That was my record when I was in university. I went to McGill. Me and my friends played that record all the time. Book Club is my favorite song, you know, like, but it was because he was in university and it was a pivotal time in his life and he was with his pals all the time. And that's why he liked the song. But like, I don't know, is it better than what we wrote last year? Like, I don't think so. It just hit the person at the right time.
Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But speaking of something that's not subjective, there was a vote in Hamilton that happened last week.
We do have an agenda.
And I don't know if you guys heard about this contest to name the snowplow in Hamilton. Shane, did you hear
about
this?
The thing you won't shut up about, you don't know if we've heard it.
It's the gift that keeps on giving, you know?
Yeah.
The first
I heard about this.
Go for it.
You set it up.
You're better at it. Go for it.
No, okay. Well, the for our listeners in Hamilton, Ontario, where Shane and I currently live, they were rolling out a bunch of new snow plows. And so I guess just to I don't know whose idea this was, the marketing for the city or whatever, but it was pretty great. They basically said, we want to name the snow plow. Let's do a vote. They did this for a boat, actually, in like London, I think, England, a couple years ago. But anyway, they did a vote. The first I heard of it was Danica, my wife, sent me the thing. She's like, did you see this is where it ties into us. Bunch of names like Control, Salt, Delete, right? Was that one of
Melton
them?
Melton John, speaking
Melton
of Melton John.
John. But obviously, you know, Hamilton's favorite son, singer of Arkells, Max Kerman, they decided to get him into the voting. So the name that they'd suggested that you could vote on was Max Kerminator. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Max Kerminator was one you could vote on. So Danica sends this to me. I'm like, oh my goodness. And then what was one? Plowy McPlowface or something, which is kind of alluded back to the boat in London. Anyway, so I was like, oh, this is hilarious. Or maybe it was in the pod group. Anyway, doesn't matter. Long story long is I was wondering how you were going to sort of perceive this thing because you weren't aware of it until the vote went up. So tell us from your perspective what you're thinking when you see this thing.
Well, I thought it was all very silly, but I was honored. I thought my nickname was probably the worst of the 20 nicknames, like like on a creative level, that like all of them were better than Max Kerminator, but I was like, oh, whatever. And, you know, it's the thing I've learned over the years is that like when it comes to any sort of like celebrity fun, it's like this thing got more promotion than us putting out an album. It's like so fucking stupid how like the thing that you really deeply care about and that is like your life's work, it's like... You're trying to think about interesting ways to talk about it so it gets shared. And then, you know, you might get like 5 retweets or something. And then for this thing, it was being shared by every radio station across the country. E-Talk is doing segments about it. Like CTV's asking for a quote. So it's like, I'm like, okay. And like, again, I then begin to enjoy it. And the other thing which I liked is that my dad was especially excited about it. He thought it was the funniest thing. And I like it too. And it kind of speaks to his character because... You know, there's like some families just like when you're a Cunningham, you're a Cunningham. And that means you wear the badge of honor or like when you're a whatever. It's like, you know, some people like talk about their family lore like that. My dad does not do that. My dad is kind of like would roll his eyes at that kind of thing. So the fact that he was like Kerminator, like this is so great. And this is so funny. And he was encouraging me.
His name is on the plow.
No, I know, but it's a snowplow.
Which is great.
It's great, but it's so stupid. It's not like, you know, we're naming it like a hospital wing after our family name. Or it's you
Don't
know what I mean?
You discount the value of snowplows in our society, Max, and what our taxes pay for. Come on, it's all part of the same machine.
Well, yeah, anyway, it's clearly very silly and goofy. But my dad was really encouraging me to hold a campaign party at odds. He's like, he's been more invested in this project than literally anything else. He's like, Max, what I think you should do is you should like, you know, give a speech to your supporters, like as if you're like Barack Obama on election night, like, you know, wear a tie, roll up your sleeves, thank everybody, all the volunteers who are knocking on doors, like make it into like a big stupid thing. And we actually contemplated doing that, but we couldn't get around to it. But anyway, you know, I assumed we'd do well, but I didn't think that we'd do as well. By the way, I'm doing the proverbial
weed.
Yeah.
You killed. No, it was when you look at the vote tally, it was outrageous. You guys, it was a landslide.
Yeah, I mean, the third place was like 11, almost 1,200 votes. Second place was like 2,200 votes, 2,800 votes. And then I was 18,000 votes. But so
you did
really demolish the competition.
Ask your fans, and you have hundreds of thousands of fans and followers. Yeah. You ask them online to vote.
I guess
vote.
The other names don't have fans either. So that makes sense.
True. Yeah. So I wonder, would you have won had you not reached out to your fans? I still think so.
Yeah, probably. But probably would have been a little tighter.
And it might have felt
Shane,
better,
did you vote?
Too. I did. I voted for Max. Even though I didn't think it was the best name, I just really... Somehow I thought it was going to be close. I didn't know you were going to blow it out of the water. I thought honestly maybe 100 people will vote on this. I didn't know it was in the thousands voting. So I wouldn't have voted if I'd known that it was inconsequential. But yeah, Control Salt Delete, probably the best name. Max Kerminator, probably the worst name. But it means the most to the people. You represent a lot. in Hamilton.
Totally. Yeah. And it was cool. They're out on the streets the other day. Someone sent a photo from like their second floor window of the Kerminator out and about.
Yeah.
Kerminator out and about. We're going to start saying that for when you party in the city. Ooh, the Kerminator's out and about.
Though it is funny because the new mayor of Hamilton, Andrea Harreth, she tweeted about like, oh, congrats to Max Kerman or whatever. And then, of course, anytime a politician tweets about you, you're just going to get idiots in the replies being like, how much did this cost our taxpayer? But is this the way we want to be spending our money? I was like, this is a free contest. Like this contest cost literally no money. And also the decals were probably like $500 a piece, like to put it on the back of a thing, and something that actually kind of sparked some fun and joy in the city. But anyway, you tread carefully when it comes to real politics. Yeah, that's right. The Arkells are doing some writing this week, so we can't stay too long here. But I want to. Did you guys see any of this marketing for Skinamarink? This horror movie that I don't think I could watch. And
yeah,
have you seen? And what's the other one called? Megan.
Megan's the one. Yeah. It's kind of like a computer animated horror film.
It's like horror AI. Remember that movie AI with Haley Joel Osment by Steven Spielberg, based on the Kubrick project? Anyway,
yes.
This is kind of like it's the Blumhouse guys, but and Allison Williams is in it. The Megan, I'm talking about. Like the doll like dances, not doll, like the AI robot. She does like a crazy. Anyway, yes, I've heard of it. And then the Skinamarink, I've only heard of because Ash put it in the group. That was the first I'd heard of it.
Yeah, we should probably come back to that and like interview that guy, because the short story is that, you know, he made a movie for $15,000 and it's already made a bunch of money. Like back, it's a horror movie that he filmed in his house basically entirely by himself. But it got me thinking about like just movies and like return on art with Megan. You know, it's like they made that movie for like $12 million and now it's, you know, it's $70 million. That's probably wrong, but like it. And then there's big movies.
I think that movie will probably make $100 million. I mean, if it feels like word of mouth or whatever is any indication, like I heard about was that fucking movie for 2 weeks. So I wonder if that will be, you know, reflected in the box office, but I think it's gonna make a lot of money.
So, but I guess my question is, are the only movies that can make money these days is like Top Gun and like superhero movies or horror movies? Because I saw Babylon and you still need to see it. We need to talk about it. And I thought it was awesome and really fun. And it had huge star power, Brad Pitt, Margot Robbie. And it does like $4 million at the box office in one weekend. Like, is this where we're at with movies? Have you guys thought about this at all when it comes to like how you market anything these days?
Tarantino can open a weekend.
He can still?
Oh, yeah. Like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood made a ton of money, but he's probably one of the only people who can just do that, where the director's name is so huge.
I think the big question tends to be like, can a movie like The Whale with Brendan Fraser, which is like, you know, a big Oscar movie, like can these sort of these smaller indies make any money at the box? Because in the past you'd have like companies like Miramax or whatever, and they'd release these sort of smaller films, or like a film like Three Billboards in Mississippi, right? Like pre-pandemic. It's like those movies. I guess the question going forward, which is like whenever you hear these sort of quotes from like Martin Scorsese or any of these guys saying like, oh, all the movies anymore are just what you just said, Max, superhero movies or whatever, these sort of like these low budget horror films. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Like what's considered a success? If you make a movie for $3 million and it makes its money back, is that a worthwhile sort of venture? Or are you saying like, how can we turn $3 million into $60 million, you know? And I don't know if that trick exists anymore, just because everything's so fragmented. Like not everyone's going to be talking about one indie movie and go see it unless it is literally like a lottery type. It's hard to recreate that. You know what I mean? Like even something that we've all been hearing about, like The Whale, you know, is like, it's building. I don't know what it's going to make. And then something like Babylon, which like you said, is stacked with star power, or Amsterdam, you know? And like, that's David O. Russell. The Babylon is Damien Chazelle, who's like the Oscar winner. And La La Land was a huge hit. But it's just like, I don't know. If people aren't interested, they aren't interested. Like could you even tell me what Babylon is about? Like the transition, I guess, from silent films to talkies. Like, is that interesting to like a fucking 19-year-old right now? They don't give a shit if Brad Pitt's in it. You know what I'm saying?
And the reviews being bad don't help. Right now, the reviews get out before the movie does too.
Yeah.
So if it stinks, people don't want to watch it.
Reviews will keep guys like us away. Like if this movie was stellar, or was getting, like, we all went and saw, or not all, but, you know, we saw Triangle of Sadness, you know, because that seemed like an interesting, maybe that's a good example of like this mid-level sort of movie that built through word of mouth or whatever. But yeah, I don't know the answer. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, I don't know. It just kind of bums me out a little bit. Is that because I like people going to the movies, but no one goes to the movies anymore. And I like movies as an art form. I like TV shows, of course, but I don't know. And I don't like watching movies at home as much. I don't think the experience is like nearly as good. So I just want, I just wonder how you get people to.
Do you have the attention span to watch a movie at home? Like, can you not look at your phone?
It's hard. It's really hard. So I think it's why I like going to the movies. I'm not allowed to look at my phone.
Have you seen the menu
yet? And
the
sensory experience is better. You know what? I did watch that at home, actually, and I really liked it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
We've all seen it then. This is what we can talk about.
Let's talk about the menu. Let's wrap it up here.
Let's finish with our thoughts on the menu here. So we've all seen it. It just released on Disney Plus a bit ago here in Canada. Why don't we start with you, Shane? What were your thoughts? So spoiler alerts ahead, I suppose.
Yeah.
Geez. Well, I was in the theater, and I was kind of annoyed for the first 10 minutes because an older woman came in, sat down, then she leaves immediately. Then the volume goes drastically down. I'm like, I'm thinking, she didn't tell the one of the people to turn the volume down. And then I go out and I complain. So I have to leave. I'm missing part of the movie. And I go, I can barely hear the movie. This is a movie about dialogue. Mm-hmm. So this older woman decided to turn the volume to the entire theater down because the trailers were too loud. The trailers are always going to be louder. Wait, if you're ever going to do that, wait to see what type of movie you're in for. Dialogue heavy movies, you got to have the jack volume. So we were in a bit of a war with the volume. So
did you go out and ask them to turn it up?
I did. And they did. And it was appropriate volume. And I noticed.
And she gets up.
Didn't, because she knew. Because she's older, too. She probably has a little bit of hearing problems, even though she might have more sensitivity or aggravation to loud noises. I think she was thankful I did that, because once the movie started, she saw, this is dialogue heavy film. I need to hear what they're saying, because nobody could fucking hear. Anyway, once I got over that and I settled in, I thought it was like the movie Glass Onion a little bit. It was a bit of a mystery, like almost like that you had to solve. And I didn't know it was going to be like that. Whereas Glass Onion was kind of purposefully cheesy. This one was like deadly serious and suspenseful, and all the suspense worked. Sometimes you try to do that, you feel nothing. It doesn't ring true. It was one of the few times I've actually forgot I was watching a movie and I was immersed in it and enjoying it on that level.
Wow.
But yeah, I don't know how to say a lot about the movie without giving too much away, because I don't want to annoy people.
We already said spoilers, so you can say whatever you want.
Like, yeah, it's like an experiential thing for rich people, where they go to this island, they pay this large sum of money, they go to an island, the menu is designed specifically for those people. It's been curated. It's a one-time only offering. So it's kind of like a look into that world and the sort of people that maybe are interested in that. They do that thing like with all of these movies where you have a sort of a wide spectrum of characters. You have like these sort of Wall Street bros. You have like a former sort of like famous actor, maybe like an Adam Sandler type, or, you know, somebody maybe a little less successful. And then you have this sort of Nicholas Holt character who's brought this girl on the date, who is the what's her name?
Oh,
Anya
Taylor Joy.
Yeah, Joy Taylor. Yeah, yeah. Who's fan? Like, she's fucking. She's awesome. Awesome in everything she is, to be honest. But anyway, so there's sort of, she's our entry point. You know, she's sort of the common person because she's there on a date with Nicholas Holt, who's the guy with the money who can afford this experience. You have a food critic that is like one of the best food critics in the world there. So you kind of get to know all of the players. Mm-hmm. To Shane's point, like Glass Onion does this, right? It's like Clue. You give everybody, you paint with broad strokes, and then you settle in. And what will the mystery be as it's revealed? But before that's revealed, meaning like what all this tension is, what do we something's going to happen. You're kind of in this foodie experience. So if you're somebody that's like a foodie, or you like those cooking shows, they're bringing out dishes and they're sort of explaining the ingredients, and they're kind of doing all. So you're kind of having, like Shane said, this immersive experience where you're like, ooh, I'm kind of enjoying the food experience, but there's also this fucking tension. And I know there's a mystery that I don't know what it is. So you're just trying to figure out what the fucking turn is going to be. And then the turn comes, which I don't know if we'll talk about it.
Yeah, maybe.
We can't reveal that turn.
I feel bad for Ash, because Ash is listening to this right now. She hasn't seen it yet.
Okay,
so Ash, maybe,
so yeah, this is confusing to me then.
Right. Yes, that's true. That's true. That's true.
Yeah, what I really liked about it is the social commentary on like pretentious food culture was really funny. Like, that was just consistently great. And the other thing is that I find movies lately have a hard time like wrapping up. Like, what is sort of the punchline? What is the way to sort of make sense of the entire story? And usually that's where movies fall apart. I feel like some movies I've seen lately, I'm just like, I love the first 90 minutes and then the last 45 really just kind of like go nowhere. Mm-hmm. And you could just tell the director didn't know what to do. This movie is like an hour and 45 minutes, first of all. And I've seen so many fucking movies that are like 2.5 hours.
Yeah,
three, like great Babylon length. Was like 3 hours, you know, Tar was 3 hours. Everything's just way too long. This is an hour and 45 minutes. And all the sort of like observations that the director in the film is trying to make when it comes to like the pretentiousness of food and the way people and the seriousness of chefs, but also the assholery of people that go to those kind of close places, like was so perfectly summed up and told when it gets to the punchline at the end, delivered by Anya. And I was like, man, and you could say it was maybe like a little bit on the nose, but I'd rather a movie be a little bit more on the nose and simple than it being messy and abstract or just like kind of ending on a nothing, you know? And so it was like one of the few movies I'm like, oh, that was actually a really simple, satisfying end to this movie. And Ralph Fiennes is fucking awesome in it.
Well, what I like too is Ralph Fiennes' character, he's essentially getting some form of revenge on people. And normally in a movie like this, the people who are getting their just desserts, no pun intended, they are so extremely bad. It's like, and you're a pedophile and that's why I'm doing this to you, whatever. And they'll go down the list of people who actually deserve to have consequence. In this, it was just, Ralph Fiennes was just petty. Some people deserve more than others. Some people didn't deserve it at all. And it just, it avoided that cliche, which happens so often. Like, oh, he just got the worst people on earth, put them in a room and decided to fuck with them a little bit. This was just, no, he had specific reasons that were personal to him. And these people weren't necessarily evil or deserving of this treatment. I also didn't know I didn't know there was something to be unlocked in it. I didn't know there was a way to avoid what Ralph Fiennes wanted them to go through. And so then, like at the very end, I was like, oh, this is like a riddle almost that could be solved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One thing that really fucking annoyed me with the film, it's probably the only thing, was Anna Taylor-Joy herself. There's a food scene where she has to eat a burger. Mm-hmm. She fake eats that burger. Probably the worst I've ever seen anyone. So afterwards, I'm looking up like, what is it? Is it that she's a vegan or she's obviously, you know, quite slender. Maybe she didn't want to eat it a bunch. So I did all this research afterwards because I had to know. So yes, she's a vegan. So she didn't want to go near the burger. And which,
but you couldn't fake that though. You couldn't get like a fake burger that looked like it. She needs a call from Brendan Fraser. You know,
See the whale yet. Is there a lot of eating in that one? Okay.
Yeah, just big.
All right. Yeah. Good movie though. Good movie.
Good movie. Recommend it. More hour and 45 minutes movies, please. Hollywood. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's it. That's all. That's our episode. Yeah, we dilly-dallied a bit.
That was great. I love this episode.
That felt like a fun one.
This is one of my favorites lately.
A lot of stuff going on there.
It's the episode 5 of episodes.
I will tell you, though, people that listen to this who watch the show now are going to be so keen for episode 6. You know, that was a good sell job. Max essentially said there was porn in episode 6.
We're going to be flipping shit around, though. I don't know if we can end on that note anymore. It might be episode 5 now, episode 6.
Yeah. Ever evolving. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to Nathan Nash for putting it all together. Thank you to Manager Ash, who just does everything great that she does. That's it. That's all. That's our episode, guys. It was a good hang. Maybe the best. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.